translation. And word for word, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Personality of Godhead said, Kama, lust. Esha, this. Krodha, wrath. Everybody knows what wrath is?
Anger.
Very powerful anger. Esha, this. Rajaguna, mode of passion. Samud Bhava, born of. Mahashana,
all devouring.
Mahapapma,
greatly sinful.
Vidhi,
no.
Enam,
this.
Iha,
in the material world.
Vairinam,
greatest enemy.
So, chapter 3, text 37. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said,
It is lust only,
Arjuna,
which is born of contact with the material mode of passion,
and later transformed into wrath,
and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust, as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. Wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If therefore the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated into the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of his spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This inquiry is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, wherein it is said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. One should inquire into the Supreme, and the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam as Janmajasya Yataha Anvayad Ittarasya Cha. The origin of everything is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the Supreme. If, therefore, lust is transformed into love for the Supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or in other words, desiring everything for Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravana. But by doing so, he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath again, to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. Arjuna had one name, Jishnu, which means he fought better when he was angry. And And sometimes Krishna had to make him angry in the battle. Like he was going to wait for Karna to get back on his chariot and fight fair. And then Krishna started telling him, you know, what are you doing? Look at this, you know, remember all the things he did, what a bad guy he is, and what he did to Draupadi, and what he did to this and that. And he got Arjuna fired up. When Lord Ramachandra fought those 14,000 Rakshasas also, he had to meditate himself into an angry mood to fight, because it wasn't his nature. But to fight, you have to be angry. For us, we're not Kshatriyas, and we should be trying not to be angry, because we've been conditioned to being angry over, you know, not being able to get our sense gratification. But it all starts with lust, so this is saying it. Lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy, and from lust anger comes, and from anger illusion, and then forgetfulness of memory, and then one falls into the material pool. And if lust is satisfied, then one will become greedy, want more and more, and eventually get angry because you want more than you can get. So lust has to be conquered. This is stated in the Bhagavatam, in the 7th canto, when Yudhisthira, Narada Muni's preaching, and he's going through all these things, how to overcome lust and how to overcome envy. You have to give up lust. So it all gets down to lust. But here we are in the mature world where lust is, you know, being promoted. Everywhere they're trying to agitate the everybody's senses of all the things that they need, trying to make us think we want things that we don't need. I think we need things, and increasing desires, lusty desires, I think it's good. You know, that means someone is ambitious or something, right? They want to work hard, get a lot of money, and it's being promoted everywhere, and get lots of enjoyment, get lots of everything, you know, get everything you've always wanted. So, but at the same time, they don't so much appreciate anger. But to try to control anger while increasing lust is a very foolish endeavor. But that's what modern society tries to do. In America, they have anger management schools. Sometimes a judge will send someone, you know, that did some violent thing or something, to the anger management school. Try to control the anger. But if they don't control the lust, then it's just artificial, trying to hold back the anger. Can't do it. So Krishna is saying it's the all-devouring sinful enemy of mankind. Mahapap, great sin, to be too lusty. Of course, the gopis, they were lusty for Krishna. If one can have only Krishna, we need desires, but it should always be for Krishna's pleasure. So bhakti yoga gives us that chance to practice, you know, wanting to do things for Krishna. You know, instead of decorating our own bodies, maybe we want to buy some jewelry for the deities, or make new clothes for the deities, or decorate the temple. And that way we can utilize, you know, and that way get purified from the lusty desires just to satisfy our own senses. Kali Yuga is pushing everyone that, you know, take care of yourself, gratify yourself. You have to enjoy, and you have to get more and more things. So it's getting in Japan they have even preschool, where the kids have to take preschool entrance examinations. You know, they have to go to, a 3-year-old kid has to go and cram school and get into the good preschool so he can get into the good kindergarten, so he can get into the good, you know, grammar school, and get into good junior high, and get to a good college, and get a big job, and get everything. But usually they're not very happy, no matter how much they get. They're going crazy, because the more you get, it's like fire, and it just gets, the more we get, the more we want. There's no limit. You know, nobody ever gets satisfied with sense gratification, trying to accumulate material things. we may get frustrated and then start to inquire about the Lord, so that's mentioned here. Ravana, you know, he conquered the whole universe. Everyone was afraid of him. But he wanted Sita, and that lust, you know, ruined it. He lost everything. The one thing he couldn't get. Other things, he could kidnap women and take them away, and some of them were happy about it, some of them weren't, but they had no choice. But Sita he couldn't get, then he had to fight Ram, and he was killed. And before he was killed, he had to see everything lost. You know, all his brothers, all his ministers, all his sons, everyone killed. You know, for his lusty stupidness. So we need to work on that, to develop desires to serve Krishna, to do good, to do things for others. Then our own lusty desires will diminish. That's just a natural thing. Ultimately for Krishna, but serving devotees, and then everyone is a devotee, trying to, you know, be compassionate, help people. And then fix our bliss, which is our natural condition, is bliss. The natural condition of the soul is bliss. Happiness that does not based on any external situation. It's just natural. A little bit inconceivable for most people. Someone actually asked, in Finland we did a program, and someone asked, how can you be happy without misery? It's an intelligent question, right? How can you be happy without suffering? When you say the spiritual world, there is no misery, there is no suffering, how can there be happiness then? Right? Isn't it? Think about it. You know, what happiness do we seek? We want to get relief from some kind of suffering. We're hungry, so we want to eat. Thirsty, so we want to drink. Right? We're poor, so we want to get rich, or whatever. We want to get relief. We're cold, so we want to get warm. All the happiness is based on that. Sukhi and dukhi. Dualities. But the real condition is beyond the dualities. And that is the nature of the soul. So Bhakti Yoga brings that out. Bhakti Yoga gives us a chance to connect with the supreme bliss, Krishna. Lord Nityananda had a name. One of his names, there's a song by, I think it's by Lochan Das, Akrodha Paramananda. That's the supreme bliss who never got angry. Lord Nityananda, he never got angry. Even Jagai and Madai were hitting him and, you know, whatever. He never got angry. People insulted him. Many people insulted him. They weren't violent like Jagai and Madai, but many people insulted him when he tried to preach, told him to get away. But he never got angry. He just begged people, please chant. That's all I ask. That's the only charity he ever asked from anyone. Just chant. And let me hear you chant. So we want to be in his footsteps and work on this natural propensities. The spiritual world is full of love. It's based on love. And love, when you love someone, you know, you do things for them. And you don't expect anything in return, real love. Don't expect anyone to reciprocate. But that's a natural condition. So we all have that love for Krishna. We all have that. We're all blissful souls. And by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that wakes up. We realize. We begin to see ourselves as we really are. Instead of identifying with the body and the mind and all the changes. And you can look on the Dhandabhats. There's one article about positive emotions. It's kind of a new movement in psychology. And you get statistics that, you know, the definitive book on psychiatry, it doesn't even mention things like love and stuff hardly. But for hate and anger and fear, they've got like hundreds of lines of writing about it. They concentrate on all those things. You know, they try to get us to remember, oh yeah, you know, get the bad, you know, remember. But no, think of Krishna. That's what the process of Bhakti Yoga is, to hear about Krishna, hear about the spiritual world, hear about the great devotees, you know, how they were acting, what they were saying, and then revive our natural condition. It's not artificial.
to be happy. The devotee will be happy in any external condition. So maybe we can have questions or comments since everybody is sitting here so nicely. Yes, sir.
Sometimes we hear that lust is also like obsession to possess.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Lust, when sometimes we hear that it's also an obsession to possess something.
Yeah.
So how do we exactly define the lust as this, in this verse?
Lust?
Yeah.
Lust, well, ultimately culminates in sex. But it means I want, me, I and mine. That's the, you know, the basis of it. I want this for myself. I want. That's lust. So that's, you know, that they push that. The Maya encourages lust. It's good for the economy, right? They think, well, if people weren't lusty, then everything would just dry up. Who would buy all these new clothes that they're promoting everywhere? Everything that's being promoted everywhere just for your own pleasure, right? So they don't like it that people will become not lusty. They're trying to make you lusty. Consider it some problem if you're not lusty. It's a psychological problem. So it's lust and motor passion, but it degrades and into ignorance, which is anger. So Krishna says many times from the very beginning, one must curb this all-devouring sinful enemy of man, which is lust. Okay? It means we have to, not that we want to, you know, like Mayavadis, especially Buddhists, they see the bad effects of being lusty. And so then they think, doing nothing, having nothing, no desires, you know, zero, that will be happy. But that's not natural. The lust is perverted desires, misdirected. The love for Krishna gets misdirected to love for our own senses and wanting to enjoy everything. So we have to redirect things to have desire to serve Krishna, to be with Krishna. Desires are there, they're supposed to be there. Emotions are there in the spiritual world, very emotional. Bhakti yoga is full of emotions, but they're joyful emotions. That's what everybody wants, right? Everybody wants to be happy. I was just in London, and we were driving through there's so many of these theaters, you know. So there were so many comedies, and they're all saying, this one is hilarious, this is the funniest thing ever. You know, you'll be so happy here, you'll be laughing, and you'll have to, you know, get a seatbelt to stay in the chair. They're big signboards. People are so desperate to be happy. So just pay, you know, £25 and get in there. But if you talk to the people that come out, you know, even if they did laugh a little bit, even if they laugh the whole time, then they'll just be unhappy when they come out that they're not there anymore. You know? And how many times can they go back and still enjoy it, right? But we want to be happy because it's our nature. It's the nature of the soul. But the only way is to connect with Krishna. Yeah.
It's told many times that this world is a place for suffering. It's like a prison house, so it cannot be a place to enjoy. And it's also mentioned like Dukhalaya Shashvatam, so it's a place of misery and we want to be blissful and happy. That's why we should aim to go back to Godhead, the spiritual planets, the spiritual world, because there is no suffering or there are no miseries. But first question is it the right motivation that, again, it's a sense gratification because we want to get rid of suffering, so let's go back to Godhead because there are no suffering?
Well, not exactly.
And second part is that because if I am suffer, it's justice. If I am mature enough, it just is that I did something wrong, so I should suffer. What's wrong with it? And if I take birth again, I mean, it's not my wish, but if I take birth again, I suffer not because God is giving me suffering, because I did something wrong in the past.
That's right.
And if I am happy because I did something right or whatever. So, generally when I speak to people who are from Western countries, they don't consider suffering as suffering, or most of them. They say it's a part of life, you know. Even if on karma,
it is.
Yeah, so they say, what's the problem in taking birth again as an insect? Because insect doesn't know he's an insect. He's also enjoying. A dog doesn't know he's a dog. So...
Yeah, they're stupid. See, they don't know any better. Right? Yeah, they don't believe there's anything else. And they say that, but then offer them suffering. Right? So it's true the material world is a place of suffering, but it's the suffering is meant to make someone realize that we should try for something else. We should get out from the suffering. An intelligent person who's in the prison, he wants to get out. Although some people want to stay in the prison. You know, they got a regulated life there, they're protected. But mostly they want to get out, so they, you know, an intelligent person will try to behave nicely in the prison and get out or get into a better part of the prison. You know, even in the prison there's different jobs. If someone gets favored, they work in the library or something, you know, and they get some favors. So the material world is like a prison house. People are here, but many prisoners are really stupid. They get out of the prison and they just do the same thing that gets them right back in. You know, they can't learn. So the Mayavadis say things like that. Oh yeah, wanting to go back to God, that's a desire also, that's Maya. You know, you should just, but then they want to not exist. That's also a desire, but that's a stupid one. Desire is part of the soul. That's the only thing the soul can actually do is desire. And Krishna arranges all the, whatever it takes to fulfill the desires. So, ultimately, a pure devotee is not thinking, I want to go back to God. I want to, you know, Lord Chaitanya said, Mama Janmani Janmanishwade Bhavatadva. I just want to, birth after birth, serve. Not demanding anything from Krishna. But that is back to God. That's what, it's not like exactly there is the Goloka, but anywhere where you're just fully absorbed in serving Krishna, that's the spiritual world. So that's what we want. Whatever, however Krishna wants us to do that. We don't want to serve Maya anymore. That's an intelligent desire. It is a desire, but it's not bad. Yes.
On the devotional part, it is said that the only way to handle the desire is to develop a higher taste. But in the duration, you know, as neophyte, till you develop a higher taste, what do you do with the new desires you get every day? How do you tackle it?
Like what? Well, you can visit temples. Yeah, I know quite a few devotees that are old, and that's what they want to do. You know, they're retiring, and they want to travel and visit all the temples in the world or something. So. That's good. But if you're busy in Krishna's service, like a long time ago, I don't know, it was 1973 or something. We went to Washington, D.C. for book distribution. And I never saw anything except the inside of the temple and the inside of the airport. I realized years later, well, you know, that's like one of the major tourist places of the world, you know. And we never even thought about it. Nobody ever thought, well, you know, let's go see the Washington Monument or the Lincoln Memorial or the Capitol or, you know, the White House or... Because we were so absorbed in preaching and giving people Krishna. If you happen to, Prabhupada said he's not a tourist, but sometimes he would see things, you know, devotees showing. Like I saw Big Ben yesterday, I think, for the first time. I think so. I saw the buildings. Beautiful buildings, you know. But nothing, you know, it's all Krishna's energy. So we want to, that's why we practice bhakti yoga, to develop proper desires to serve Krishna. And then meanwhile, if we go somewhere, like Rupa Goswami said, if you go anywhere from Vrindavan, you only get the trouble, the only value is the trouble it takes to get there. But we do go other places for preaching. You know, we'll go to many places. And in the process, you might see the place a little bit also. But that's how, you know, we go, we want to gradually develop that, that we just want to serve Krishna. Then that there's unlimited service to do for Krishna. Krishna is unlimited. Then there won't be time for the other thing. Or, you know, if you want to see how stupid it is to be a tourist, all you have to do is just go to London or something and watch people for a little while. And you probably never want to be like that. You know. And everywhere I go, because I go to all the tourist places, Krishna, and because that's where temples are a lot. And the people are crazy. Oh, they just go shopping. You know, they just go and buy the same old things, and you know, a few different things. Maybe, you know, they have some local arts and crafts or something. But many people, they do exactly whatever they do at home. They drink this, you know, that's why in the airplane everybody buys cigarettes and everything, because they're afraid they might not have their favorite brand of cigarettes in the foreign country. Mm-hmm. And they buy the whiskey, and then they go to the DVD shop, and then they sit in the hotel and watch movies. And maybe they take a tourist bus somewhere, you know, look at something. Much better to go places to preach, go to the temple. And that's actually like Vanaprastha, that's one level of Vanaprastha, that people travel and visit holy places. It used to be practically that, except for a few merchants, that's the only traveling people ever did, is to go to holy places, go on pilgrimage. Now everybody's madly traveling everywhere to all the unholy places, you know, trying to see everything. But there's always something else you haven't seen. There's plenty of temples also. If you have that propensity, then visit temples. And when you visit a temple, make sure you hear the talks about Krishna and join the kirtans and do some service. You'll be very happy. Yes? Anyone else? Yeah, the song. They're very nice, actually. They have an interest in spiritual things quite a much. They love to sing and dance and chant Hare Krishna. If we distribute a book there, many people will read the same book. You know, there's everywhere you go that the actual preaching is basically the same, but getting things accomplished and organizing is always different because of different cultures and different, you know, ways that people have of doing things. So all over Africa, the people are very receptive, you know, basically. We get opposition from Christians a lot, so-called Christians. Not that some of them are very favorable. The ones who are fanatically just exploiting people, they're afraid when someone's preaching the truth. But we make, you know, a lot of devotees, people come, televisions, newspapers like to interview us and ask questions. In fact, one devotee was writing a column weekly for the newspaper. A lot of times they ask, you know, when there's some question, some crazy thing happens or something, they'll ask,
you know, religious leaders, and they include Hare Krishna when they, for their opinion, you know, of explanations of different things that are going on in the world. So we need more foreigners to come in and help preach. So you're welcome to go there. It's not far from here to West Africa. So. Lufthansa flight. Direct. Shishi Gornitai Kija. Oh, nice door. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Maharaj, actually, you were talking about going on world tour, and you were saying that it's good if you go for preaching to different temples, visiting the holy places.
Or if you go to places where there's no temple, if you go for preaching, that'd be great. That's what we're supposed to do. Go everywhere, every town and village. And you see everything too. You know? Right?
Sometimes I see that there are devotees who have plans that in future they're going to visit all the temples.
Yeah.
Like in India also, I meet the devotees. They say that in coming years they are planning to travel Europe and America and visit different temples. Now, I was just thinking, is it not sense gratification to go to different places? The temples are there, so people generally want to visit the places, and they will also visit the temples because they are devotees. But the purpose is not the preaching purpose, just going and visiting different places.
Well, it's transcendental sense gratification. It's not. You know, everybody's at different levels, so, you know, if someone wants to visit a temple, that's good, you know. And if they want to take all the trouble to travel all over and visit all the temples, but they get enlivened. That's why Prabhupada, like, he made the life member thing, where they can have 3 days, you know, they can come to the temple. Because he thought that would get people to go to the temple. So that, you know, someone becomes, in India, I don't know now, but it used to be like, they would come and say, I need that card immediately, I'm leaving tonight. Do you have a guest house in Paris? Do you have a guest house in New York? Do you have one here? Do you have one? They're calculating how much money they're going to save by staying at the temple. But when they stay at the temple, they also take prasadam and they, you know, they come to the, sometimes come to kirtans and associate with devotees and they get purified, they get enlivened. And they start wanting to visit temples, you know, wanting to go to more and more temples, go to more and more rathiyatras. So that's all right. And then Prabhupada told people, if you're in Vrindavan, like this devotee that we just, if you've been reading it, what was his name, that just left his body in Vrindavan? Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu. I didn't know him very well, I just know he used to serve the, he was quite old and he was a cook for many, many years, but that ended a long time ago. He couldn't, you know, do that work, but he was giving out the Charnamrita. And he was so blissful giving out Charnamrita, and making sure everybody got it just right. And he never left the compound of the Vrindavan temple for like so many years. One time he went to a doctor. He was completely satisfied just to stay there. So that's also very good. Janani Vas and Pankajanri, they hardly ever leave Mayapur except if there's a deity installation somewhere. Pankajanri has to go for the visa, so he goes for preaching to other countries. Janani Vas just stays in Mayapur, he's totally absorbed. But if there's a big deity installation, then they go to manage the whole thing. One time they went to Vrindavan just to see how they're dressing the deities there. So they could, right? So, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. Some of us have wanderlust, so we end up traveling all over for various reasons. But we just, you try to, wherever you go, stay engaged in Krishna service. Chant the holy name. Like Jai Pataka Maharaj has this safari, he calls it, every year after the Mayapur festival. So they go around different parts of India, they go around Bengal, or they go to South India, or different tours. So it's a big group. It gets up to like
150, 200 devotees from all over the world. So the devotees get to see all these holy places and hear about all the, you know, activities of them. But also, every night there's a big program in Kirtan, and the local people get really excited to see all these foreign devotees coming and preaching and doing Kirtan and everything. So it's, you know, it's very good. Everybody gets satisfied to travel around and see everything, but they're associating with devotees all the time and doing big, big preaching. So that's how we dovetail all these things, because we want to go everywhere and preach. And if you want to see places where there's no temples, you can. That's very good also. Go and distribute books and chant the holy name. Right? People will be happy to see you chanting. That's most of the world. Almost anywhere, they've never seen a devotee. We had a big Harinam in the Boxing Day, whatever. Do you know what Boxing Day is? Nobody knew what it was. You know,
day after Christmas.
Yeah, it's the day after Christmas, but nobody knows why it's called Boxing Day.
I hear it's because I don't think that's where they box up the presents that they didn't like so well and they take them.
Something like that, yeah. And pack up things, you know, after Christmas. Maybe put away all the Christmas decorations. People clean the house and they put things away. Anyway, whatever. They had a really big Harinam, and the streets of London are just so crowded we could hardly move. And then we were seeing in Leicester Square there for a long time, and there was four Muslim girls, young girls. They were watching, they were smiling, they liked it like anything. So I asked the girl, do you like this? And she said, yeah, this is great. How long have you been a Buddhist? Because now when people see a shaved head or an orange, they think Buddhist. Somehow, even though you never see a Buddhist monk anywhere, you know. But people ask me much more. People ask, today at the airport too, the boy said, what's your religion? Are you Buddhist? Because somehow Buddhism is getting a lot of publicity, but Hare Krishna is not. So we need to make more publicity. But it was ecstatic. People loved it. So many people joined in and were dancing and chanting. Munich is also one of the best places for Harinam. I've ever been. Any other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, these two points, which is kamesha and krodha, which is your lust and anger, is as a devotee we can try to address in our conscious mind. But a lot of times in the subconscious we keep getting angry and we commit mistakes, errors. How to address the subconscious? Because we can just put some effort to address the conscious part of it.
Well, subconscious, as much as I can figure out, when psychiatrists talk about the subconscious, they're actually talking about the super soul, who, you know, helps us remember and what we're desiring. So the whole process of bhakti is to practice bhakti and purify the consciousness, subconscious or whatever conscious it is, but purify it so that we want Krishna. We don't want to go around getting angry at demons and killing demons or something. You know, it's not a very good idea for like Hanuman. Even Hanuman, when he was so angry, Sita told him, Hanuman, you shouldn't be so angry. Haven't you ever done anything wrong? You know, she was preaching to him that he shouldn't be angry. She didn't want Ram to fight either. A woman. But that, the idea is to purify, to, you know, to develop desires to serve Krishna. Lust is the perversion of the real desire, you know, the mundane lust. Then when it's not satisfied, we get angry. That's kamesha, krodesha. So as we get enough good desires and we work on fulfilling them, then the other ones, they don't have time for them. Because that anger is like a powerful amount of energy. So if we recognize it and then, you know, try to utilize that energy for something useful, like they say, even what I remember from as long as I can remember, they said, like, you know, if you feel angry before you say or do anything, take 10 deep breaths. You know, it's a good idea. Think about it a little bit. Do some pranayama. You know, because the body is polluted. And anger pollutes. Prabhupada writes that in a few places, and it anger, most people don't purify their anger, but many times we're afraid to really express our anger for fear of the other person being more powerfully angry than us. And we just put it away somewhere, and then it pollutes the body, pollutes the mind, pollutes the body, causes all kinds of sicknesses. Anger stored up in the kidneys and the liver and everywhere. Pollutes everything. So we want to give it up, you know, we want to purify. And that means wanting Krishna instead of wanting all kinds of things for ourselves and getting mad at the person we think who blocked us from getting it. Right? We are even getting mad at yourself. You know, got to be careful. But so bhakti is just a whole process of developing desires of, for good things, for love, for serving Krishna, for serving devotees, for kirtan. So if you feel really angry, get some kartels or mridanga and go out somewhere and just chant, you know, downtown streets until you feel peaceful, right? Take it out on the... It's a fact, it'll work. You have to take deep breaths and then chant really loud. That's better than just taking deep breaths. Hare Krishna. Shout Hare Krishna. Utilize that energy. It's a very powerful energy. Sex desire is also a very powerful energy. So the yoga process and in any religion and even in martial arts is to utilize that energy for something else. Not to just waste it. Okay? Is that all right? Are you an angry guy? You get angry on it.
Yeah. Please share some realizations on chanting.
From what?
On chanting.
On chanting.
Some realizations so that you can take chanting more seriously.
Well.
Yeah.
Chanting, I'm trying to realize that I have nothing else except chanting, you know, that way we could chant properly. But somehow or other, Prabhupada said, what do you get from chanting? Or someone asked Prabhupada, he said, you get more chanting. So if we just keep chanting, and we have to try to chant attentively, and, you know, it's actually, we're asking for service, so to be willing to do service. And then that the holy name is so nice, it's so sweet, Krishna is so kind. And there's so many slokas about it. And so many devotees chanting, and you know, see how it's changed so many people's lives. Even our own life, you know, it's quite inconceivable for most of us to have been given, you know, changed so much, the direction of our life. But it's all due to chanting. Chanting is everything. Without chanting, it's very hard to do anything else in Krishna consciousness. So it's Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatya Ranita. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. The more you chant, the more you will want to chant more. Even though sometimes we forget, sometimes it seems like we can't do it, right? We have so many other things to do. But we want to, you know, chanting is a special mercy that Krishna is appearing. Mm-hmm. So we want to be with Krishna. The holy name is Krishna. Madhuri, you have anything to say?
You just said everything.
Not everything. But, and public chanting is especially good. Haridas Thakur said loud chanting is 1,000 times better than silent chanting. That means chanting. He said the reason is because more living entities can hear it. So that's very important thing is to get out and chant so that the moving and non-moving living entities can hear it, besides, you know, ourselves and the temple. When we're chanting, and it's for Krishna's pleasure, Krishna is very happy to hear. And other devotees are happy to hear you chanting. Tulsi is very happy to hear you chant. You know, Krishna is very happy. It's not that, like, if you chant my name, I'll be happy, thinking, yes, I must be important. You know, that's not the same as the way Krishna is happy. Krishna is happy to hear us chanting his name because that's the best thing for us. Not because it, you know, pads up his false ego that he's a big important person. When you're the most important person, and you don't have to worry about, like the little tiny dogs are the ones that bark all the time, right? You know, the big, big, strong dogs, they sit around and they don't just yap all the time, everything. So Krishna is happy to hear us chanting because that's the best thing for us, and that's what he's concerned about. It's Nama Chintamani Krishna's. You know that verse? What is it? Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Purno Shudo Nitya Mukta Vinatvan Nama Namano. What does that mean?
Totally.
Huh?
Totally pure and totally liberated.
What?
Totally pure.
Yeah. It's Nama Chintamani Krishna. It's completely spiritual. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It's full of life force and taste and form. Chaitanya means a living force. Rasa means taste, which means enjoyment. Rasa, relationship, taste. Vigraha has form. Purno, Shudo, is completely pure. Nitya Mukta, eternal liberation. And Vinatvan Nama Namano, there's no difference between the name and Krishna. That's pretty good, right? Sounds okay. Rupa Goswami wrote that verse that Lord Chaitanya likes so much. How does it go? Tunde tundavali ratim vitatune tundavali labdaye karna krodha kadam dini gatayate karnar budebyo spriha chetak sangana prangini Vijayate Karmendriyana Sita No Jane Janitaki Yadbi Amritai Krishneti Varnadvai. You know that one? Rupa Goswami was writing and Lord Chaitanya came and, you know, he was trying to look at what he's writing and he was trying to hide it. I remember in the school teacher used to look over my shoulder, I couldn't stand it. I don't need any help, get out of here. But anyway, Rupa was embarrassed. He thought that, you know, what he did wasn't. But Lord Chaitanya grabbed it and he liked it very much. He was in ecstasy. So later they were all together and Rupa Goswami was very new in the group. And there was Haridas and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Advaita Acharya, you know, all the senior devotees. And Lord Chaitanya told Rupa, where's that verse you were writing? So he recited that verse and everyone was in ecstasy. They were flipping out and they said, you know, we've heard thousands of verses glorifying the holy name, but we've never heard one like this. This is the best one ever. You know what it is? When the holy name dances on the tongue, then we think that one tongue is not enough. We should have thousands of tongues. And when the holy name enters into the holes of the ear, karna krodha, then we feel like two ears is not enough. We need thousands of ears to hear sufficiently. The holy name is so great. And chetak sangana prangini, when it enters into the heart, then the mind becomes stunned. And then the senses become inert. And no jane janitaki, then nobody knows how much nectar is in these two syllables, Krishna. That's how Rupa Goswami was saying, and that's what everyone appreciated very much. And then of course they just chanted more. Just try, you can't ever get to the end of it, you know. Ever fresh, and you know, we can, I wish I could go on glorifying the holy name like Lord Chaitanya did. Haridas Thakur just simply chanted all the time, but he could also glorify the holy name in so many different ways. He told Lord Chaitanya that, you know, by the kirtan, the whole world is already liberated. Don't worry. Okay? Anyone else have some nectar about the holy name? Everybody chants, right? Why do you chant? Right? Because you have to. You don't have to, you know, because so many devotees give it up after a while. You know, the regular chanting. For whatever, some unfortunate reasons. We do it because it's so nice, because you want to. And it just keeps getting better. Alright? Any other comment or question? Is it time to stop? We haven't got too many reports from the marathon around the world yet, but London was quite ecstatic. So many devotees went out. And in Bombay, even Radhanath Swami went out a few days. Then all the devotees, when they heard he was there, they came and bought books. Get him to sign the book. Because it's so ecstatic. It's giving Krishna to people. It's ecstasy. All right? More? Okay.
A lot of times when we are chanting and we are trying to read and understand the scriptures which are there, what is the significance of patience in context with our endeavor?
Very important, patience. Utsaha nischaya dhairyat. Utsaha means enthusiasm. What is the next one?
Determination.
So enthusiasm, you know, pops up often for something. And then, you know, you're really into it, but then it may become difficult or not so much nectar for whatever reason. So that determination is required. You have to keep going anyway, keep trying, you know, to carry on day by day. And that's in any endeavor, but we're talking about spiritual life. But then if there's no patience, if one is in too big of a hurry to get some kind of result, and oftentimes that's what ruins relationships and endeavors and material and spiritual. People want some quick, you know, result, and they're impatient. Oh, it hasn't come yet. I've been chanting for 2 years and, you know, my hair's not standing on end and everybody's not worshiping me yet, and, you know, what's the use of it? You know, but you have to be patient. Keep trying and wait. Keep trying and wait. Very important. That without patience, that patience, tolerance, same. And you have to tolerate, you know, ups and downs and difficulties and dry spells and all these things that happen, right? As we're trying to, you know, get purified, as many waves. Patience, very important thing. Is it worthy of a lot of study? And, you know, understanding. In Japanese, the word for tolerance and patience, the same word. It's, you know, it's very close. So Lord Chaitanya said, tolerant more than a tree. Right? To put up with a lot of things. And wait patiently. Don't get demanding, Krishna, you know, why you're not giving me all that. Right? Haridas Thakur was chanting, and there was a snake charmer, and the snake charmer became absorbed in some Krishna Leela and was, you know, reciting and chanting, and Haridas went into ecstasy and he was rolling on the ground and, you know, crying, and everybody was honoring him like anything. So there was one brahmana that thought, oh, well, I'll do that also, and then everybody will honor me. So he rolled on the ground and started crying, and the snake charmer, who had somehow become like empowered by Ananta Shesha or something, he got up and he started beating that Brahmin like anything, and beating him and beating him until he had to run away. And he couldn't understand, well, I was rolling on the ground and crying and everything too, and why are you beating me, but you honored him? Mm-hmm. He explained. He was in a hurry to get, you know, somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we have to go along. The patience is very important. With other people, we have to be very, you know, when we're preaching to people and training people to be new devotees, we have to be very patient. You know, we can't, why don't you, you know, learn this right away? What's wrong with you? It doesn't work. You know, with children, you have to be very patient. If you're raising children, if you're a teacher, with yourself also in spiritual progress. And it will come. It's always coming, but, you know, sometimes we don't perceive how much progress we're making. Right?
Yeah.
And we heard a good example yesterday, or the other day, from Gauranga Prabhu, from Shopati. He said, sometimes a big athlete, of course, he's probably talking about Ganguly or Sachin or somebody, but they have bad times. You know, they have periods where they can't perform very good. You know, no matter how hard they try and no matter how good they were before. So the coach will tell them to just go back to the basics, you know, just practice the very basic thing. So he was saying that same thing. Devotees sometimes, you know, we can't forget the basics. 16 rounds, the basic things that, you know, attending the morning program and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, the basic things. If we try to put other things ahead of that, then we lose our taste. Okay, ladies, any comments? Any more questions?
While you were answering the previous question, you told that sometimes it becomes very dry.
Yeah.
What is the basic elements behind the taste becoming dry in our spiritual endeavor?
Because we're in a purifying stage. So we go up and down. You know, sometimes maybe we're inattentive or we made some offense, or it's just the way it goes, you know, right? Like anything, like someone's investing in the stock market, sometimes they lose, you know, right? They don't always win. Sometimes they lose. The sports team, you know, sometimes they lose, they have bad days. It's nature. The material world is like that, and our mind is like that. So there could be many, many, you know, immediate causes or remote causes or whatever. But one has to have faith to keep going anyway. Even though sometimes if one is impatient to think, well, I'm not getting all the nectar, and why should I do this anymore? You know, if you have too great expectations, you know, thinking some kind of false idea not based on scripture, but we're progressing. Sometimes we're just not recognizing, so we think it's dry. Sometimes we're just not attentive and it is dry. Then we have to try to pick up, but just keep going, it'll come back. Okay? Thank you very much. Who's going tomorrow to, what do you call it, Simachalan? Anybody going? Many? Wow. All right. You going? Anyway, it'll be very nice. So many devotees will be there. Srimad Bhagavatam, or Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Ki jai.
Jai. Swami Nuskavitanda Swami Ki.
Jai.